Hola, welcome to Financially Savvy in 20 Minutes, a bilingual podcast that shares interviews with self-made millionaires, financially savvy investors, and all things financial literacy and dinero. Your host, Natalie Torres, is a two-time TEDx speaker, an award-winning author, investor, and financially savvy Latina that has been featured on NBC, Telemundo, and Forbes as a financial literacy and mental health advocate. She is joined by her co-host, Vera Eagley, an author, investor, and seasoned insurance professional. Hello, hello. Welcome to Financially Savvy in 20 Minutes. I am going solo today as a host, missing Vera because she's killing it out there in her space, and so happy to be able to step in when she's been doing this for me for the past year. So we're coming back with this season with some amazing guests, and then we wanted to return some great guests that we've had in the past because not only are they a wealth of knowledge, but you know, they're always constantly pivoting, constantly creating, constantly just bringing more to our industry. And so I felt the need to have him back on, not just because he has this great book coming out or is out, excuse me, but also because I think I've known him now for virtually for a few years. Last time we saw each other was pre-pandemic, and it's just wonderful to have him here. Jordan Grummet, I know you know him as Doc G. And one of the greatest things about him is not only his authenticity of how he cares for people, what he does for a living, but also more importantly, how he shares his knowledge with others, not through just his writing, but just being on our podcast again. So welcome back.
Good Natalie, to see you. I'm so happy to be back here with you. We always have great conversations. So thank you for having me back on.
Thank you. I mean, it's hard to think it's been pre-pandemic since we did that recording, but I urge you guys to listen to that first one because honestly, reading your book, your first book, was what I needed at the time too. I have an elderly mother-in-law, and you know, Alzheimer's, tons of things have happened, or she's broken many parts of her body, and then rehab, and then being in the hospital for many years. All those things you start to really see when you have elderly parents and or just caring for elderly, right? But I want to dive into what you're doing now, what you've been doing post-pandemic, and also just tell us a little bit more also why you wanted to share this book with everyone, because I think it's fascinating when you see people sharing more of like, hey, you know what, I didn't get that in the first book, or I really wanted to. So what brought you to that?
Well, I was marketing my book, Taking Stock, and I was going out and giving talks about it. And the idea behind the book is that we need to put our purpose, identity, and connections before our finances and then build a financial framework around it. And I was stunned to get somewhat the reaction I got. When I say somewhat, it wasn't from every person, but there was a significant minority of people who'd come up to me after my talks, and they'd be a little bit angry. And they'd look at me and they'd say, you know, I love the fact that you're talking about purpose, identity, and connections, but I've been searching for my purpose for years now, and I can't find it. It has me frustrated, and I'm starting to think there is no purpose. And they were a little annoyed that I kept on talking about purpose. So this really got me interested. And so I went to look at the data and really researched a bunch of studies out there. And there are hundreds of studies that show that having a sense of purpose in life is associated with health, happiness, and longevity, like the big three. This is really exciting. But then I looked at other studies that showed that up to 91% of people get what's called purpose anxiety, this idea that purpose kind of freaks them out and makes them more unhappy than sad. And so that was a paradox. And that's where I dug in to decide to write my second book, is how do we resolve this paradox? How can it be both the most important thing and yet hugely anxiety provoking? What I came to the conclusion of is that most of the time we get purpose wrong. It's not just one thing, it's probably two. And if you do one of them, you're going to be a lot happier. And if you do the other, you might find yourself anxious and disappointed.
Oh, you said it so well. I even felt my throat kind of closing up, that you said the anxiety part, but also at the same time.
I know, and
you
start sweating, right? Yeah. You start sweating because you have a physical reaction to it.
Oh, I love it. And obviously the book code, the purpose code, right? The one thing I loved about what you just said is You try to do at least both. You try to figure something out. And I'm not surprised that people said they're angry going this. And I think as we get older, we might feel some of those emotions, right? Because it's, oh, I should have done this. Or at least when I'm younger, I thought, oh, I can do this by the time I'm 30. And, 40, 50 comes around and you're like, wait, am I still on that path? It's pretty shocking how you said 91% feel this way. And, I like you said, the big three. So can you dive a little more into that too? Kind of like, what's that takeaway for people when, after they speak with you, how do you tell them to deal with that, those emotions, especially if it's anger?
Well, there are a few things, right? I think there are a few big key points to this book. One is you don't necessarily find purpose, you create it. And so I think a lot of us are sitting there waiting for purpose just to knock us over the shoulder and present itself to us. And that's just not how it is. So first and foremost, you create purpose, you don't find it. Second of all, there's not like this one big thing that if you do it, your life is going to be great and you're going to have impact. And if you don't do it, all is lost. Purpose is a varied thing, and you can have one purpose or many purposes. Your purpose can change the world, but it certainly doesn't have to. And your purpose can last for a few days, a month, a year, or a lifetime. What I really want to do is help people take the stakes off of this idea of purpose. Once we do that, we really have to talk about the two different types of purpose, because we've been led to believe by society that we should have what I call big audacious purpose or big P purpose. And this is very goal oriented. And it's usually this huge goal, like I want to be a billionaire, I want to be an astronaut, or I want to be president. And the thing about that is it's all or nothing. It's very difficult to achieve. You have to be the right person at the right time with the right genetics and a lot of luck. And the truth of the matter is most people don't get to that big audacious purpose. They don't get to that thing they think is so important. And so what they're left with is disappointment and anxiety. I want to flip the switch a little bit and say, you know what? Purpose should be abundant. Instead of looking at goals, maybe we should look at the process of doing things that lights you up. What do you do that you really enjoy? And when we look at it this way, it becomes really abundant. It's not all or nothing like big P purpose. It's all or all. You simply do the things you like to do. And once they stop serving you, you start doing something else. So what I really like about little P purpose is it's not really failable. And so this is a really abundant way to think about purpose. It takes away the stakes. It takes away the anxiety and leaves us with more of a blueprint of, okay, lots of things could be purposeful to me. Instead of trying to find what is, maybe I need to identify some anchors, some things that feel that they could possibly be purposeful. And then the job is on me to build a life of purpose around those things. And so that's where I kind of start the discussion.
Oh, I love it. And for those of you who are listening, you must read this book. If you're already, you're hooked the moment he starts talking, but this is how it is when you're reading his books. I think it's, you just said it, it's all in all, having this blueprint. And you and I had this quick conversation before we went on to the podcast about, my husband not reinventing himself. It's adding on to literally a childhood dream he's always had is, being a comic. And as a professor, shout out to Nathan Haddad, Professor Haddad, hey. But, him and I, to see him doing this in his 40s, a lot of his friends have, he hasn't talked to since high school. Like, oh my gosh, man, you were always so funny. And to see you doing this now. And you just said it, creating your purpose is really important. It's hard. And you just said bringing into small little pieces. I don't want to give away the book, but yes, can you tell us a little further kind of like, how did you get to your purpose? Or obviously you still work on your purpose. But what has helped you to, like you said, make them more reachable as opposed to saying, I'm going to be an astronaut and yet never gotten on a plane before.
And even before I do that, I want to point out the example of your husband, because this is perfect, right? So he could go for big P purpose, which means he's like, I want to make a living being a comic, and I want my own Netflix special, and I want, a million people to follow me on Instagram because they think I'm the greatest comic in the world. He may get there, but he often might not, right? Because there are only a few people who make it to that big. The rest don't. And if that is your goal and you're creating a sense of purpose based on that goal, most likely you're going to be disappointed unless you happen to be the right person at the right time saying the right things with a lot of luck. On the other hand, if he looks at this and he says, I love the feeling when I am on stage telling a joke and people are laughing. I love sitting at my desk writing out what I want to do. And I'm just tickled pink when I think I've come upon something people laugh at. You know, when you hit the stage, if people don't laugh, or if you don't get that Netflix special, it's still time well spent. It still fills him up. And so he's won already. He's won regardless of what happens next. And so I had to come to my own conclusions about the same thing, because I was living a life of purpose as a doctor, something I really almost stole from my dad. So my dad died when I was 8 years old. I cosmically felt like I was somehow responsible. The way I was going to make up for this was to become a doctor like him and walk in his shoes. And that became my sense of purpose. But ultimately, it probably wasn't amazingly authentic, because I was co-opting his sense of purpose. It wasn't something deeply that I started with. It was more me reacting to the trauma in my life. I got to a point where I realized, hey, I'm not really enjoying this the way I thought I should. And I was good at it. It was something that I was talented at. I was making lots of money doing it, but it wasn't filling me up. And so I had to start looking at these other pieces of my life. Well, what does fill me up? When do I feel like my best self? What kind of activities do I do that I get so engaged in them that I don't even realize time is passing? And I started seeing these patterns in my life. I had written a medical blog for years, and I never had time to do it because I was so busy practicing. So I'd be writing it during lunchtime or late at night when the kids were sleeping. I'm like, I write because I have to, not because someone pays me for it, not because I'm even having that much success, because not even that many people were reading my blog. I do it because when I'm doing it, I'm my best self, and I feel like I'm giving my natural gifts to the world when I'm engaged in this thing, regardless of who pays attention to it. And so I was able to pick out, hey, I really like communicating. I like writing. I love public speaking. Eventually, that turned into a love of podcasting and eventually a love of writing books. I was lucky in a sense because I was part of this financial independence community. So I was already building up a financial framework. A lot of what my first book says, build that financial framework up around those things that feel purposeful to you. So when I got to the point where I had the emotional energy and enough financial backup to really leave that life that wasn't serving me and start a life more full of purpose, I could. Now, here's the caveat. If I had understood my purpose a lot better, I probably could have started doing purposeful things way before I was financially independent, and I would have enjoyed the journey more. For example, although I don't love medicine as much as I used to, there is a small piece of medicine I still like doing, which is being a hospice doctor. And I would do that even if you weren't paying me for it. So I know this is deeply a part of my purpose. If I had had these realizations at the beginning of my career, I wouldn't have bothered doing all those other things I did in medicine. I would have gone right into hospice medicine. And I'll tell you, I wouldn't have made as much money, and I wouldn't have gotten to financial independence as soon. I wouldn't have been able to retire early. But my career longevity would have been much greater because I would have been loving what I was doing. And so when you start with purpose, you win either way. It can be your passionate job, or you can have your job, which is mediocre, and build that passion around other parts of your life. But we have to start thinking about this now as opposed to putting it off.
Oh my gosh. It's, you feel like you're in church when you're here, you know, like those, having those aha moments. And those that are watching this, I got a little teary-eyed hearing, because I know some of your story about losing your father early, but you just hit, what is it? You hit the nail. Was it you hit the nail with the hammer? I'm always saying
you
these
things. Hit the nail on the head.
Yes, thank you. But you know, kind of lately, because my husband and I, we've been arguing a bit. Information out there, but and because when we have a little one, we have a baby, you know, almost a little over 7 months, and the fact that you know you have to work around that schedule, and I have this huge talk that I've been planning for the past 19 years, talk about purpose, literally soon. And the fact that it's taking me this long to get there. And now I'm like, oh my gosh, this is the time I have to do it. And then he's also planning his shows. And it's kind of like, which is more important than the other? They're both equally important, but you know, we tend to fight them. Like sometimes you said it, is it always about the money? No. Is it about, you know, the experience? Like he recently did an opening for Bill Burr. How amazing is that? Shout out to Bill Burr, because we think you're awesome prior to that. But it's how do you balance that? And you said it, where you might love what you do. Sometimes you think you'll do it for free as well, right? Because you know you love it that much. But then it's also kind of like the grind and the all the behind the scenes, like the amount of stress my poor husband has dealt with me this past month. I know it's not just stress because everything else. I mean, hello, being a new parent, especially in your 40s. But it's this talk that's driving me insane. And I'm like, why am I stressing out about this? And Once again, you just said it because it's been something that I've always wanted. It's part of, it's aligned with my work, but it's also, it's this public speaking forum. And so I think you're hitting it so well.
Mm-hmm. This is why this is important too. Let's add another layer.
Yeah.
You have a child, and the best gift you can give to your child is having them see you live a life of little P purpose. You are giving them permission because one day they'll be in their 20s and they're going to have to make tough decisions. And they're going to look back and remember mom and dad did what was deeply personal and deeply purposeful for them. And that gives them permission. Listen, you don't want your kids to always be grinding it out to make more money or to do the thing that they think they should be doing or other people are telling them they should be doing. You want them to have that freedom to go out and do what really lights them up. And by doing it yourself, even if it's hard, even if there are sacrifices, even if you can only do that little P purpose in a very small way because of what's going on in your life, what you're giving your children, that's impact and legacy. So everyone tells me, boy, I like big P purpose because that's the bigger impact and legacy purpose. I say, BS. Doing what you do can change the people around you. And those people will become a better version of their self because you are being lit up and intentional. And they are drawing that in and they're learning from you. And maybe someone who has similar interests is going to start collaborating you and you become their mentor and they become your mentee, or you become their teacher and they become your student. And before you know it, by just doing the things that deeply light you up, these, you know, quote unquote selfish things, you're actually changing the world.
Oh, that is so, so on point. And that's the conversation when I always have. I'm like, I want our son to have, you know, I don't want him to say, oh, I didn't do it because you were here, or, you know, and sometimes as kids we hear that, we're like, oh, if I didn't have kids, I could do this, or I had you too young, or had you too old, or whatever the decision or the make comes in. And you said it well, or it's kind of, we want to be that example, people change. And it's funny you said that, you know, people become your mentor and you start to change like them. I've known about you before, but I know we officially met through I love this guy, Joe from Stacking Benjamins. Shout out to him. But not only did he talk you up so much, which was right on point, I think about a type of person he is. Like, kind of, I see the success and the things that he's had to deal with, the challenges. And he's been very open with me about, like, hey, do this, don't do this. And having that, you know, mentor is really key. But then they connect you with other people, like you said. It's just kind of, you want to be that person. And I feel like today you were meant to be my interviewee today, because it was just that I was thinking, I'm like, did I really need to do this talk that I have coming up next week? And granted, if I don't do this talk next week, it would take me maybe another 5 years if I get that opportunity again. And so, and just hearing you say, kind of like, I think I'd do it for free anyways. I think this is something I know I've always wanted to do, and I really want to at least give it a shot. And just those things that we talk ourselves, and I've literally been trying to talk myself out of, and I've been trying to do other things other than what I need to be doing. self-sabotage.
And you start thinking about it. And ultimately, I always like to take the stakes off. And so I tell someone who's struggling and where you are, it's not just that you want to do this one talk or meet this one goal. What you're really doing is you're building yourself into the kind of person who takes these opportunities, who passes on this kind of knowledge, and who steps up to the hard things. So God forbid something happens and you can't do that one talk. You actually haven't lost. Yes, you might have lost in the short term, or maybe you didn't make the connections you were hoping to, or maybe it didn't lead to what you thought it would lead to. But by building yourself into that person, because the goals are going to come and go. And here's the problem with goals. A lot of times what we think is going to fill our hearts and we reach this achievement, it doesn't. Achievements last for minutes or sometimes weeks. But the process of getting there, what I call the climb, is what you're going to be engaged in 95% of your life. So we need to learn to enjoy the process. We need to love the climb. And so in becoming this person who's going to give this talk or do this event you're talking about, you're already winning, whether you make it to the event or not, whether the event is successful or not. Now, I imagine you'll both make it to the event and it's going to be wonderfully successful. But the truth is, you're already winning because you're doing those things that are lighting you up. You're building that purpose into your life. And that's kind of the magic. And let me tell you, I'm going to go right against my book here. It isn't even about purpose. Purpose, especially little p purpose, has been shown scientifically to improve health, longevity, and happiness. But if we look at the long-term studies about what really makes people happy, one of the best is the Harvard Adult Health Study. And it studied people over 70 years, interviewing them every 2 years, talking to their family, having them fill out these huge questionnaires. And you know what they found the closest association to happiness was? It wasn't purpose, and it wasn't your job, and it wasn't achievements. What was it, Natalie?
We're going to do part two because we need to find out what that is, right? So stay tuned for the next part of this amazing episode. Thank you, Doc G.
To learn more about the podcast, follow us on Instagram at FinSavvyIn20Minutes and catch our interviews on YouTube. If you want to become a sponsor, hire us for your next workshop or speaking engagement, reach out to us at financiallysavvyin20minutes.com or send us a DM. All it takes is 20 minutes out of your day to become financially savvy.